Thank you, Robin. Everybody that's here is an alcoholic. Hold your hand up. I look like I'm among friends tonight. My name is Henry Watson, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi, buddy. I've had a real enjoyable time here. I've had a young lady that came with me that I hadn't known very long. And I told her I was crazy when I first ran into her. And she tells me I'm not. She says, I've been working with nuts for a number of years and said I recognize them right off. So we'll see how this works out. Like I said, my name's Henry and I'm an alcoholic. Hi, buddy. I don't know what I'm going to say tonight. I hadn't got anything that will impress anybody. I've been in the program of, well, I had my last drink on October the 24th in 1965. I didn't drink for such a long span of time in years. I didn't drink but about 13 years. But the last 5 years of that drinking, the only time I wasn't under the influence of alcohol is when I was locked up somewhere. And I don't know how you people are, but when I got to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I could sit up and watch the TV, and the TV didn't even have to be on. And I'm here tonight, and if this cross falls off of this little platform it's sitting on back here, I'm not going to look back there to see where the noise came from. I'm going to look at you folks to see if y'all looking at it. And you can tell by that I saw and heard lots of things during my drinking. I was one of these people that wasn't going to ever drink. There'd been some drinking and all in my family. I'd been with crowds when I was a kid growing up, drinking, never did have any abuse or anything like this. They were just crazy drunk. And I just wasn't going to drink. And I went off to school over at Mississippi State back a number of years ago. And I got to running with a crowd that drank. And I'd go and they call them designated drivers now. I don't know what we called them back then. But anyway, I'd go and I'd do the driving and I'd bring them home. And this went on from the time we started the school in August to September till just the night before we got out for Christmas. We'd go two or three times a week to Columbus, Mississippi, and the crossroads and the state line and places like this, and I'd bring them all in drunk. But we stopped at the crossroad. They closed at midnight this night coming in. It was on a Wednesday. And I bought a Miller's High Life beer, the first beer that I had ever bought. Now, I had tasted of a little eggnog and wine and homebrew and stuff like this, but just tasted is all, never enough to get any effect from it. But I bought that Miller's High Life beer, and I couldn't get but a half of that beer down. And I went home for the Christmas holidays, and I came back to school at Mississippi State, and I ran with this same crowd of boys from then for the next year and a half. And within 2 weeks' time, I was drinking a half a case, as I was experiencing blackouts and all the things that go along with heavy drinking. One of the first things that I remember, we came in some short time after I started drinking, and I'd always heard these older folks talking about when I was a kid growing up, if you get into bed and the bed's rolling, stick your hand off on the floor and it'll stop it. Well, about the first or second time that I drank that half a case, I came into the dormitory and that floor, I mean, the room was going round and round, and I put my hand off on the floor, and it didn't have any effect on it at all. So I got off in the middle of the floor holding the floor, and that didn't have any effect on it. Well, I drank like that for the next year and a half or 2 years, never gotten any problems. I was working my way through school, and my desire to go to school was greater than my desire to drink, and I'd get up the next morning and go to school, even though I'd gotten drunk at a hoot owl the night before. And I left Mississippi State, and I went over to Auburn for 4 years, and the same thing happened over there, except I started drinking whiskey. And I was working over there. I worked at night every other night till midnight, and I'd go to class all day, 5 days a week. And I had to study, so when I got in at night, I studied. But every Friday and Saturday night, we got drunk. And we'd go down to Tuskegee and sell a pint of blood for $15. And you could go over to Opelika, Alabama, to the liquor store, and you could buy this old PM. I think it was a blended whiskey for $2.69 a fifth. And that's where I spent my $15. And just like I said, I got drunk every weekend. But my desire to go to school was greater than my desire to drink. And even though I got drunk on the weekend, I made it to class and I made it out of school in 4 years. The first time I ever got on a prolonged drunk, and we went to Chicago between my junior and senior year at Auburn on a trip. We'd sold chances on a new automobile and made the money for a class of 61 people to go to New York for a week to visit some companies and all up there. And the requirement to get on the train was that you had to have two-fifths of whiskey. So we had 61 people and two-fifths of whiskey apiece. We left Opelika, Alabama on June the 1st, going to Chicago. It was real nice, 85, 90-degree weather, and we left in short-sleeve shirts. We went through Louisville, Kentucky that night about midnight. We was out of whiskey. Somebody on the train had been through there in the service, and he got off and found us a case of whiskey while they was switching in there. Anyway, we got to New Chicago the next morning on the 2nd. It was snowing like a cat and cold as a... And we'd come up there for summertime, and here it was wintertime still. But anyway, we stayed gone a week. We didn't sleep any. We stayed drunk. And we had an old boy at home from up at Fulton, Marvin. Some of you may have known Marvin back in the past. And Marvin always was swearing off or drinking. And I didn't know anything about swearing off anything, but looking back, I swore off of drinking when I got back from that week's drunk. And I wasn't going to never take another drink. And I don't remember what was wrong with my old car, but we had a week off between the time we got back and the time we started classes that summer. We had to go to school between our junior and senior year. And you know, I hitchhiked home back to Mississippi with one of these little old gym bags and about two changes of clothes. And like I said, I wasn't going to never take another drink. I hitchhiked home with two-fifths of whiskey and two changes of clothes to stay for a week. Anyway, I'm sure I drank that up while I was home. I don't remember, but I came back, and I was living in the clinic for that next 9 months, so I didn't do a whole lot of drinking, and everything went along well. Skip back a little bit, a few years before this, the only time that I was ever locked up in jail for my drinking was back when I was a sophomore at Auburn. bunch of us had been out partying one night, and the law stopped us and arrested me for reckless driving. I had a little old Henry J. automobile, and it was me and three great big fellas in that little Henry J., if some of you remembered, is a real small car. But you could go down the highway, and you could do the steering wheel about two or three times like that, and the car would still go in a straight line, but it'd go like a snake down the road without you even touching it. And the law stopped me and locked me up for reckless driving. And that was the only time I spent the night in jail. And the thing that did to me was I didn't stop drinking. I just didn't drink and drive. I'd let somebody else drive. Anyway, I went on for three more years after that at Auburn, and we went through that weeks drunk and got back, and I went to school for the next 9 months. Things went along pretty well, and I graduated, and I came back to Mississippi to work, and I came back and I lived with a great aunt of mine for about 9 months, working there in West Point, Mississippi. And I worked long, hard hours, and I fixed me a little old bar up in the room that I had rented for her, and I ate one meal a day with her and ate out the rest of the time. And, you know, I didn't think that I drank that much. About 9 months later, I moved to Aberdeen, where I am now. And, you know, when I got to Aberdeen, I fell in with a crowd that drank. I went to work in business for myself. You know, if you drink, you fall in with the folks that drank, and I worked hard, and I worked long hours. And for the first couple of years I was in Aberdeen, I didn't take a morning drink. I would work till whatever time I got through, and I'd have me a few drinks, and I'd have a date or whatever, and go out and eat, and I'd get in anywhere from midnight till daylight, and get up 5 o'clock. A little after every morning, go to work. I had lots of fun. I did lots of things that I never would have done if I hadn't have been drinking. But you know, this drinking progresses on you. I know I'd been in Aberdeen about 2 years. Now, I had had a morning drink before on Sunday morning or something like this. But I really call this my morning, first morning drink. This old fella came in the office one morning. He said, "Doc, you look like hell." He said, "You ought to take you about 2 ounces. So as soon as that fella left, I went and got me a couple ounces. And you know that morning drink progressed with me just like that beer drinking did and just like that whiskey drinking did, because when I first went to Auburn, my roommate and I would buy a pint between us and our dates for Friday nights. By the time Christmas came that first year, we was buying 2 pints apiece, and before that year was over, we was buying 2/5 apiece for the weekend. This morning drink progressed the same way. He suggested that morning. I took a morning drink. Within a few days to a few weeks, I was taking one every morning. And it wasn't long till I was taking one at noon. And it wasn't long till I was taking one in the middle of the morning and in the middle of the evening. And then it wasn't long till I was like old boy out here in Texas said that I wasn't as drunk part of the time as I was most of the time. And this is where that 5 years of drinking, unless I was locked up somewhere, came in. Because I drank from 1960 to 1965 to that degree. Now, I was the same way about my work that I'd been about school. I never did lay in the bed because I was drunk or anything like this. And you know why in the world an old drunk thinks that don't anybody else know that he's drinking, I never will understand. And you know, it's one thing about getting sick at your stomach, you know, puking. The last 4 or 5 years of my drinking, I was sick every morning. And you know, I prayed to God every morning, Lord, if you let me get over this one, I'll never do it again. And you know, I'd wake up the next morning in the same shape, day after day after day. And you know, I got real good at that puking. I had a little, later on when I got married and I had children and all like this, I can remember the baby, when I'd get ready to carry her to nursery school, when she came along, the third kid, she'd all get sick every morning before we left the house to carry her to nursery school. And I told her one morning, I said, Kim, I said, you're going to have to, I'd stop drinking at this time. I says, you're going to have to learn to do like your daddy used to do. She says, how's that, daddy? She said, well, I said, well, you know, daddy, this was back before your time. I had a lot of trouble with getting sick at my stomach. But I said, I got so good at it, I said, I could puke over either shoulder and never get a drop on me. But I said, it's one thing that you got to remember about puking. You don't never puke into the wind. I said, if you can do that, you're going to be all right. But anyway, I started taking this morning drink. I didn't think I was having any trouble, and I was having blackouts. I was in a car wreck a couple of years after I started taking this morning drink in Nashville, Tennessee. I was sitting up there asleep. My wife was driving, and the baby was laying on the seat between us. I don't know what happened. She dead center of the light post right uptown Nashville. We were going up into Kentucky. It was just before Christmas in 1962. Stayed in the hospital about 5 or 6 days. I'd been drinking for 2 years, like I say, around the clock. At the fourth night, I started seeing and hearing things. I didn't know anything about alcoholism. I didn't know anything about the DTs. I didn't know anything about anything. I wasn't an alcoholic. I just drank a little bit. But anyway, I started seeing and hearing things, and I couldn't understand all this. But they said I had a concussion from this car wreck, because my face had been cut completely off. My eyebrows was cut out, and they were laying down over my eyes, and both sides of my face were cut back. You could see my teeth and all like this. Middle of my nose was cut off and hanging down by one lip. And I was just cut up real bad. But anyway, they said I had a concussion, so I laid it on a concussion. There was an old boy who lived, worked at home. That was from Nashville. He'd come up here for Christmas. He carried us back home. My brother and his family had brought our other car up here to us. So we went back to Mississippi. We left up here on a Friday. Wednesday night and Thursday night, I'd been seeing and hearing all these things. And I'm sure that I said something to the doctors. Maybe they gave me something. I don't know, but I didn't keep me from seeing and hearing them. We went on back, and on the way back, this boy didn't tell me this till a few years later. He was a lab technician there in the hospital at home. But he said, coming on back, said I'd be riding, sitting up there, we'd be carrying on a conversation or whatever. Said all of a sudden I'd say, look out. And I'd look behind us like that, going down the road. Said he didn't see anything. He just kept driving. He said he thought I had something from that concussion, Anyway, we got on back to Aberdeen. We had Christmas for the baby. I got in my car and I started out to the bootleggers, and these same animals, not maybe the same ones, but some animals and people and things like this walk across in front of me. Well, I just stopped. Let them go on across, and then I'd go on. I made it out to the bootleggers. I got me something to drink. Before I got back to town, I wasn't seeing things. Wasn't hearing anything. So I said, what I got to do now is drink just enough not to see and hear things, but not enough to get drunk. Well, you know how this goes. My drinking was just as bad or worse than it ever was. Well, about a year after that, I started making the hospitals. And you know, I've been in the hospital about 10 times for my drinking. And you know, I don't know whether I can prove by my medical record tonight that I'm an alcoholic or not. Back then, they didn't put you in the hospital for alcoholism. But I've been in there for gastritis and enteritis and neuritis and nephritis and pneumonia. Everything under the sun. But the last time I was in the local hospital at home, I had the DTs. I'd been there about 4 or 5 times in a period of about a year. And they put me on antabuse. And both of these doctors that were doctoring on me were some of my old drinking buddies. And you know how we always pulling something on each other. And they told me, said, this stuff will kill you if you drink with it. I hadn't had anything to drink. I hadn't been there but about a week, but I hadn't had anything to drink since they put me in there. And I mean, I had a good case of the DTs. And this was the same time that President Kennedy got shot when I came out of the DTs, and I didn't know whether I'd done it or not. But they told me if I'd take this antabuse, said, you better not drink on it. Well, I got out of that hospital on a Friday afternoon, been taking antabuse about 3 days. I went down to the bootleggers, and I got me 2 pints of whiskey, just like I'd always been doing. I stopped at the stop sign about the length of this hall from his place there. Excuse me, had me a drink, and it didn't kill me. I woke up the next morning, I went back to the bootleggers because I drunk those 2 pints up. I took the antabuse just like they said take the antabuse, and I drank whiskey just like I'd been drinking whiskey. About a week or 10 days later, I wound up in a nut ward down at the University Hospital in Jackson, Mississippi. I didn't know when I got there. I didn't know how long I'd been there. The first thing I remember, I was sitting in a little room that was about, say, 6 feet wide and about 12, 15 feet long. There was a plate glass window sitting right in front of me, about 6 feet in front of me. There was a psychiatrist sitting here with a desk against the wall. He told me that I'd been there so many days. He said, it's a certain day in October. It's 9 o'clock in the morning. He told me what my name was. And he wanted to know which way was east. I was sitting there looking out a plate glass window and the sun is shining right in my eyes. It's 9 o'clock in the morning. And you know, so help me, I couldn't tell that fellow which way was east. It seems like there were 4 directions, but I couldn't tell you what those 4 directions were. Anyway, I stayed in that hospital about a month. Or 6 weeks, they use this conditioning reflex on you, kind of like they use to train the rat to ring the bell to get the cheese and all like this. Anyway, I stayed dry for a short period of time after I got out of that hospital. But in the next year and a half, I made that hospital 6 times. Staying about 2 weeks to 6 weeks. I think one time I stayed 2 weeks. But I was get out, except for that first time, and go right back to drinking. The last time I was in that hospital, I had the DTs. I ended up in a straitjacket. And they made something similar to the video. It was a motion picture back then of me in the DTs. And I came out of the straitjacket and the DTs on a Sunday night late, and on Tuesday they showed me that movie. And I was just as nutty as any nut you ever saw. The stuff that they asked me and the answers that I gave didn't have any relationship at all on that movie. You know, we dream a lots of things and we see a lots of things and we think a lots of things. But to see yourself and not just imagine it or think it or something like this, I said to myself and I told them, I'll never take another drink as long as I live. On Tuesday, this was on Tuesday morning, they showed me that. On Tuesday afternoon, there was an old boy came by there that had been in AA, been sober about 6 months from Hattiesburg, Mississippi. They were having the state convention in 1965 at the old King Edward Hotel in Jackson, Mississippi. And that's where I was in the hospital, is at the University Hospital. He asked me if I'd like to go to an AA convention. He'd been sober about 6 months. And I told him I would. I didn't know a thing in the world about AA, other than a little story that I'd heard back when I was in college. It seemed like that they were having a meeting like we having here tonight, the story that I heard. And there was a woman up behind the podium talking. And she was said that if it was supposedly an AA meeting, says if you drank as much as a half a pint a day for 2 months, says it'll rot your stomach out. And said this old drunk in the back of the room raised his hand up and he says, lady, said I've been drinking 2 pints a day for now on 20 years and said I'll put my old belly up against your belly anytime. Now, that's all in the world that I'd ever heard about AA. And that's not what AA is about. But anyway, I went to this convention with him, and I was 5 days or so out of the DTs and the straitjackets. Everybody at that convention, it was 500 or 600 folks there. I'm in a room full of folks. It was in June. It was hot as a cat, but the air conditioners was working pretty good. And I looked around, and everybody just as clean-faced as all as y'all are out there. I was sitting there, sitting on my hands, bouncing up and down, and there was beads of sweat on the end of my forehead, big as the end of your finger. I weighed about 225 pounds. I was so heavy I couldn't get over and tie my shoes. I went to that convention. I heard a lots of things. I saw a lots of things. But, you know, I didn't have good walking around sense. Anyway, there were some people there in Jackson that carried me to probably 5 or 6 to 10 meetings over the next month that I was in that hospital. And I was just like a lots of people that come into AA. I'm new here and I don't know anything. I'm just visiting here. I didn't really know, I don't think, that I had a problem with alcohol. I didn't know what my problem was. I thought everybody else was causing my problem. But I got sane enough that I read the first 164 pages of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I believe to this day that that's what saved my life, that I got enough sense in that 6 weeks that I was there after that first 2 weeks, that I read the first 164 pages. I thought I'd had a spiritual experience, and I was just like I'd said a number of times before, I didn't think I'd ever take another drink as long as I live. Like I said, I'd been seeing and hearing things for about 2 years, or better, in fact, about 3 years. But they'd been worse. And, you know, talking about these things that you see and hear, I don't know whether I was smart or dumb or what, But you know, I told about two people about them, and they acted like they didn't believe me. And hell, I just didn't tell anybody else. But you know, it's hard to carry on a conversation with Tammy over here. And old Leroy and Sam's over here talking to me all the time, and y'all can't see him. It's hard not to let somebody know that you... these pictures or movies that Jimmy Stewart makes, you know, I get a real joy out of them because I know what he's going through. But anyway, I went to AA those few times. I read the big book. I wasn't going to never take another drink as long as I live. And you know, I never had been over in Rankin County, which wasn't wet, but was almost wet back in those days, to buy any whiskey. The day before I got out of the hospital in Jackson, Mississippi, I'd found AA. I'd been in a straitjacket, been in a nut ward for 6 weeks, and wasn't going to never take another drink as long as I lived. I'd been drunk for right at 5 years, day and night, except when I was locked up somewhere. Wasn't going to never take another drink, and I went over in Rankin County and got 2 pints of vodka to carry home to my friend. Most of you know what happened. I was drunk when I got back to Aberdeen, Mississippi the next day. This was in the middle of July 1965. I had my last drink on the 24th day of October that year. I lost everything that I had in the next few months, family, the old office and the house that I was living in. I didn't lose them, but I was old for them. They told me at this hospital that they wouldn't take me back anymore. They didn't have any treatment centers, anything like this. I didn't think that I was an alcoholic. But you know, having read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, the first 164 pages, it tells you in there that you're going to come to a point that you know that you're going to have to do something. I had wrecked my car on a Thursday night somewhere, until this day I don't know where I wrecked it. Knocked a hole in the radiator. Going in the house, I fell and cut myself on the steps, and they carried me down to the hospital, stitched me up, and the police came by there. By the time they was getting me sewed up. Now, these people were kind and nice to me and enabled me to drink longer probably, because I knew all the local law in a small town. They'd take me home and things like that. But anyway, my wife was raised in hell because I'd come in drunk, which I had for months and years. She'd carried me down there to sew me up. So I just got in the car with them, with the police. Rode off with them, stayed with them all night. They carried me down to the jail and let me sleep in a cell they never did lock. And then they carried me home by daylight the next morning. They helped me carry my old car to the shop for them to fix the radiator on it where it's broke. We filled it up with water. But that particular Friday, I drank about 6 pints. Now, this is the way I had been drinking the last few years. If I wasn't busy, I drank about 2 pints a day. Or if I was busy, if I wasn't busy, I drank in about 6 pints a day. And that day I drank 6 pints, and my daddy came by there just after night. This was on about the 22nd of October. And I was sitting in my old easy chair back there in the back of the office. And he asked me about it. And I didn't know what had been going on. But anyway, I got in the car with him and went home. And didn't drink anything from then till Sunday afternoon. We came back to move my family away. They'd gotten somebody with a truck, and we loaded up what furniture and all that they needed, and they left. And in the process of moving them, we found a half a pint in the back of the commode. Well, we went back to my daddy's, which was 12, 15 miles from there. That night I got him to bring me back. I had just had something I had to tend to, you know. And I got that half a pint where I'd hid it under a mattress out of the back of that commode when we was moving them out. And I went in the bathroom and I drank about half of it and it came right back up. I gave it a few minutes or half a minute or however long and I drank the other half. And it came right back up. Now that was my last drink. I went and stayed with my brother for a little over a week. They lived in a trailer about 10, 12 miles out in the county. And he'd bring me to town about daylight every morning, or his wife would. And I'd tend to what I had to tend to at the office. And they'd take me back out there and lock me up. I'd ask them to keep me and hold me. He'd stayed with me one time when I had the DTs at home in Aberdeen in the local hospital. I said, hold me till you make sure that I'm crazy or whatever. But if I get out and get drunk, you make sure the sheriff picks me up and they send me to Whitfield or whatever. But they kept me under lock and key for about 10 days. Like I said, I weighed about 225 or 30 pounds. They lived in a little old trailer, had little old windows about like that. They'd take the doorknob off the door and I couldn't get out. And I sure couldn't get out them little windows. And I saw and I heard things those 10 days. And then I told them after that, I said, I'm going to have to get out of here and go back to work. And if you see me or hear me being drunk, you see to it that somebody locks me up before I kill somebody or something. Because right back in those days, I don't know why I didn't have a car wreck and get killed or kill somebody, I don't know. Because when I got in a car, I pushed it to the floor, and that's the way I drove. Wide open, gravel road, paved road, whatever. But anyway, some way, somehow, I managed not to take a drink. I got back home and I rearranged what little furniture I had. Just like Robert was talking about, if you get rid of part of it, you got more room to put things back. I started going to AA. It was 20 miles to the closest meeting. You know, it was about 3 years before I had good walking around sense. For about the first 3 to 6 months that I was in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I never got out of the first two paragraphs of how it works. You know, y'all had told me to read the book, make the meetings, don't take a drink, and ask God to help you. I didn't take a drink a day at a time. I read the big book, them first two paragraphs, for a long time because I'd read a sentence, start on a second sentence, and I wouldn't know what I'd read in the first sentence. So I'd turn around and reread it. And you know, if you'll stay with it, you'll finally, hopefully, come back to where you realize what's going on. In other words, I was 31 years old. I'd graduated from high school, graduated from college. I didn't know which way was east. And I couldn't read and understand the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. But y'all told me to read the book. You didn't say you had to read the whole thing at one time or what length of time you had to read it. You just said to read it. In other words, if I couldn't go to sleep, I read till 2 or 3 or 4 o'clock and maybe never got out of the first two paragraphs. Some of you can't understand that. Some of you can't understand what I'm talking about, seeing and hearing things. When you get some old son of a gun that follows you around talking to you all the time, it's a good thing I didn't meet Trish back then, because she'd have had me in that nut war. Another thing about praying to this God, you know, I've been praying to this God before I got to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and especially since 1965. I prayed for you, and I prayed for me, and I prayed for lots of people. But you know, one of the funniest things happened last week. I was reading in the 12 and 12, and it was talking about this prayer, and I think it was step 10 or 11. It gives you a good prayer in there. It was talking about talking to your preacher or something like this and getting some books on prayer or something like this. And it says something along there in the latter part of it that if you hadn't got a prayer, can't find a good prayer, just say, Lord, thy will, not mine, be done. Well, I got up that Wednesday morning. This is on Tuesday night that I was reading that. And I take a bath in an old tub, and I get down on my knees to run the water in that tub. It's not one of these modern tubs. You know, it's got a little button. You got to put one of them stoppers in the bottom of it. And I say my prayer while that water's warming up and running in the tub. And that's the prayer that I said. Well, I worked hard Wednesday morning, and I got off at noon, and I ran and got me a bite to eat. And I went back to the shed, and I gonna get my old mowing machine out and cut the grass. And I've been having lots of trouble with this mower, with the belt breaking and the belt jumping off and all this kind of stuff. I pulled out of that shed and got about the half length of this room out of that shed, and the axle broke off and the wheel fell off. And you know, the first thought came to my mind, this is how I feel about God today. I said, Lord, you sure have got a funny sense of humor. Because here I'd been having all kinds of trouble with this mowing machine, and then the darn wheel falls off of it. Anyway, I laughed about it. I took the thing off, took it apart, carried it to the shop, had it welded, brought it back, put it back together. Hour and a half I stood with my mowing, but I laughed the rest of the day about the good Lord and his sense of humor. We don't ever know what he's going to give us. But you know, if we are sober and we are grateful for whatever it is we get or for whatever it is he brings to us today, it's something to be grateful about. This is what this program has done for me. I know our time's about to run out. I was so glad when the drawing went over a little bit. That meant that I wasn't going to have to talk so long. This program has meant the world to me. For the first 4 or 5 years that I was in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I probably made 5 to 7 meets a week, and it was 20 miles to the closest meeting for the first year. I had a little old address book that I had your name and lots of names in there, with your address and your telephone number and which group you went to. And in the back of this little book, I had the groups listed everywhere within about 150 miles of Aberdeen, Mississippi. I had it written down there how many miles it was to the meeting, where they met, and how long it took to drive it. And that's the way that I work my AA program. When I got enough sense to read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, I begin to read and study the whole book of Alcoholics Anonymous and not just the first few paragraphs of how it works. And I don't read every day now, but I still read the book, and I read the 12 and 12 more than I do anything else. But I got sober. I attended lots of meetings. I've been to Kentucky, Tennessee. Used to come to the Tennessee Convention pretty regular the first 10 or 15 years that I was in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. The last time I was in Nashville, I flew up there. I took up flying. I'd always wanted to go flying and learn to fly. And after I'd been sober a number of years, I decided one day, there was an old buddy of mine that started flying, and he got in his private and got in his instrument rating, and he's fixing to get him another airplane. And I saw him at a drunk meeting. I hadn't been flying with me. I hadn't been flying too long. He said, I'm fixing to get me another airplane. I said, well, why don't you bring yours up there and let me try it out? This was one he was going to sell. Here I was, had never had a lesson. So this was on Saturday night. On Monday evening, he called me just before I get off work. He said, "What you doing?" I said, "Well, I'm fixing to go home in just a little bit." He said, "Meet me up at the airport." There's an airport about 3 miles from the office. So I met him up there. He said, "Get somebody in there to carry me down to Starksville, which is about 40 miles away. I'm going to pick up my airplane, and you can bring this one back up here." So I got somebody in there that could fly. We carried him down there. We brought the plane back. I never did get to fly it because the weather was tough for 2 or 3 weeks, but I talked to an old boy, and I started taking lessons. And over a period of a few months, I got my license. And that's an old drunk get up in an airplane and fly around and be able to find his place from one place to the other. That's a miracle. Anybody, but I'm talking about especially an old drunk. I went on, I bought an airplane, and I got my instrument rating, and I had a wonderful time over the next 12, 13 years flying, but I decided a few years ago it's about time for an old man to get out of it because I wasn't flying enough. But getting back to the AA, I had the opportunity in service to serve the program of Alcoholics Anonymous in the state of Mississippi. I guess about in every capacity over the years. I served as a GSR, as a committeeman, as a delegate, and a chairman, and a treasurer, and everything else over a period of a number of years. I made a world of meetings. I made lots of friends. And if you notice, I walk up to you and I tell you my name's Henry. And you know, hell, everybody will look at me and they say, "I know you, Henry." Hell, I ain't interested in knowing you knowing who I am. I'm trying to find out who in the hell you are. But anyway, I've gone to a world of meetings. I managed to stay sober one day at a time. I got divorced about 19 years ago. And you know, things have gone real well. Whatever happened to us in life, there's always a reason for it. And whatever we do with our lives, or whatever I do with my life, as an alcoholic, it's got a purpose. If I don't forget who I am and what I am. In other words, I can go, the way I understand the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous today, and it wasn't this way back in the beginning, that I can go anywhere and do anything anybody else could do if I'm spiritually fit. If I feel like that I'm up to it, except drink whiskey successfully. And I know today that I got another drunk left in me. But for those of you that don't understand, if you hadn't been in the program long or you hadn't had this problem, this thing about this seeing and hearing things, about watching the TV and it's not even on, and just like they was talking about the noise out in the hall last night, Trish said, "Do you hear that?" No, I said, "I just waiting to see if you heard him." You know, this program's good. It's real good. I'm glad to be with y'all. The time is up. I've had a wonderful time. If y'all get to Mississippi, come to see us. We got a state convention coming up in Columbus, Mississippi. The last day of this month and the first 2 days of June, we're going to have a wonderful time. We'd like to invite all of you to come be with us. Thank you.